he has to like go on one final like trek through the world.
I kind of want that, but if he's just the old guy in town who's at everyone, I would be super down. He's just like, you don't know what's going on right now. I'd be like,
thank you, Warwick. Thank you very much, Warwick. Mr. Davis, I mean, thank you very much.
Welcome, Applauders, to this month's podcast. I'm Lydia Malcolm.
I'm Jen McQuaid.
And I'm Naomi McQuaid. And you know what we're going to review because you clicked on the thing. Willow.
Was it this prophesied on our last podcast?
I mean, it might have been.
I don't remember. I remember sitting with you and saying, hey, we need to pick out a movie and it's your turn. And you're like, I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do. And I don't remember why, but I just said Willow.
Yeah, because here's the thing. It's something that if you've seen it, then you know it's good. If someone hasn't seen it, you can be like, well, let's watch it together. You know, you're not going to hit anything too, I mean, from toddler to elder, like you're not going to find anybody who doesn't appreciate something about this film, you know?
It does kind of break our sci-fi streak. Because we totally, convinced ourselves that Cats is a sci-fi film.
And we convinced ourselves that The 13th Warrior was a sci-fi film.
Well, there were more legitimate reasons as to why The 13th Warrior was a sci-fi film versus Cats. But Willow is definitely, like, breaking that in so many ways. Because there's magic in this movie, even though some of that magic isn't necessarily reliable.
True.
Okay, so where we always start is where we shall begin, in that the year is... The year of our Lord, 1988. And I was 5. So I probably waited a couple years and watched it on TV or VHS, as one is wont to do. Infantatum, the end. There's not much. It's just always been in the lexicon because it is one of the finest films of all time. How did y'all?
Right. For me, like most of the other like films that were made before 1991, I watched this on network television. So it was one of those movies where it was like, yeah, we can totally like put this out there on Q13 Fox or like whatever channel was out there at the time. And it was like, it was just always shown. And I was like, oh, this is a really fun show. This is a really fun movie. Oh, Val Kilmer is really cool in this. Oh, Val Kilmer is in this. Oh. A Warwick David. Like, there's the progress. You got the Val Kilmers. That's like your initial attraction. But then as you watch it more and more, you're like, Warwick Davis? Warwick Davis?
Not gonna lie. With you 100%.
It's hard not to find him attractive in this film. And maybe that's just more of the characterization. But even still, it's like, you know, it kind of is like informative as a child. I was probably like a preteen when I first really saw this. Mm. But like, as I watch it like over and over again, as I'm growing up, it's like, this becomes like, it's like on network TV, like a couple of times a year. And every time it's on, I'm like, yes, I'm watching Willow. Yes, I'm looking through the TV guide for something that's going on. Oh, this is Willow. Yeah, I'm going to be watching Willow.
Fantastic. There's nothing wrong with that. Jen, you?
Oh, I saw this in the theaters.
No.
Yeah.
You lucky duck.
You had such a better childhood. Sorry. Maybe you didn't.
No, well, parts of it.
Parts.
I was in a family with the Satanic Panic era. So I don't know how my family decided this was going to be an okay movie to see, but we did.
The bones tell you nothing, Jen.
It's true.
I know why this was, like, I kind of came from a Satanic Panic family as well, and I know exactly why this movie was okay for me to watch. It's because nobody in my family was paying attention to what I was watching.
My family straight up was like, hey, we're going to watch Willow. Anybody make popcorn? Microwave or on the stovetop? Either is fine. Thank you so much. Don't want to wash a pan? Fantastic. Get a movie butter flavor. Okay, we're going to need 2 bags. There's like 5 of us. Okay, cool. Yeah, but nobody reaches their grubby little children hands in because that's gross. Get a bowl.
Yeah.
That's how we were when I was a kid.
Yeah.
On our little beige couch with our pink and blue floral pattern. Mm-hmm. watching Willow. I'm sure. Here's the thing. I was young enough that I'm pretty sure I wandered away through parts of the film and wandered back. Or if something dragged in a way that a child would view it would drag, I would go do something else. Like I'd focus on the popcorn, or I'd go pet the cat for a little while, and then I'd come back to the film. And so as we did our rewatch, I was like, huh? Did that? Huh?
See, that's like part of my rewatches, because in network television, there were a lot of things that would get censored or just straight out cut. I would think the network, like as apparently the network television edit expert on the podcast, I would say that there's very little that's actually cut out from this movie.
Maybe a boob grab.
I actually think that might have been left in, because Guy's not technically grabbing a boob. He's grabbing fruit.
Except it's squishy, so you can tell it's like foam. And then like later on it's fruit. We'll talk about it. It's fine. It's fine. But hey, now that we've all been there, you got some Sean facts for us, Jen?
I do have some Sean facts to introduce us. This movie came out in 1988. It was directed by Ron Howard. There may be three or four real movies that Ron Howard directed before this one. This is maybe the third or fourth, actually. The original story was created by George Lucas, and Ron Howard was in American Graffiti, which is one of George Lucas's first films. That's how they kind of got to know each other. You'll find a lot of sort of this, hey, this person is here because they got to know this person over a course of different movies, like the star Warwick Davis was Wicket, one of the Ewoks in 1983's Return of the Jedi. So there are a lot of sort of interrelational casting decisions and staffing decisions within this movie. It also came out in 1988, which was the year that Earth Girls Are Easy came out.
Oh, no.
You should totally check out our podcast about Earth Girls Are Easy if you want our opinions on that movie.
I'm so mad about that. Why?
2 weeks.
So that'll be our insert sci-fi relational.
Why? Oh, no. That's like saying, like, look, hey, I've served you like a 5-course meal, right? Let's look at 1988. 5-course meal. I'm going to give you Willow. That's like filet mignon with like a little uni splatter and a like little a sea foam on the side. And then I'm going to give you a little Earth Girls Are Easy, which is like Velveeta mac and cheese that's been in the fridge a bit too long, but then microwaved a bit too long, so it's both soggy and stale.
You add hot dogs to that dish?
No.
Oh,
you'd
okay.
add Vienna sausages. Oh, yeah. With the goo. And that's not because I hate Earth Girls Are Easy. I love it. It's just you wouldn't serve it on the same menu. You know?
This is like a full-on like meal that you would serve to a king. That's what Willow is, versus Earth Girls Are Easy, which is what you eat the night after a party in your PJs.
These would make a very interesting double feature for sure.
Jen, are you saying that we need to live stream it? Like maybe it's a Patreon exclusive? Like I think both of these aren't on Disney Plus. Just one is on Disney Plus. But like it's a double feature. Maybe when we start a Twitch channel, we go ahead and
imagine watching the Twitch and you sign on and it's the three of us. And then the whole time I'm just like,
Speaking of loud noises, this film was accompanied with a THX trailer called Chimerin. The original trailer was recalled after a few months due to complaints of theater owners complaining that it blew out speaker drivers. Thank you, George Lucas, for all of your technological achievements in film. At the Academy Awards, this film was nominated for sound effects editing and visual effects, but lost to Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
So Who Framed Roger Rabbit came out in 1988 as well?
Okay, but that's like a perfectly cooked sirloin burger with like a fatty netting with the cheese inside and then like duck fat fried french fries.
I don't mean to go on a tangent, but have you ever heard about the book that Who Framed Roger Rabbit was based off of?
No.
Okay, we might have to do Who Framed Roger Rabbit at some point because of the fact that book is super messed up.
I want to read that book.
Interestingly enough, ILM lost to ILM because ILM did Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Darn.
The visual effects in this film are superior in their subtlety.
Right.
And Who Framed Roger Rabbit is definitely great, but it's because it's over the top.
Right.
It won Best Costume at Saturn Awards, and there it was nominated. Warwick Davis was nominated for Best Performance of a Young Actor, but he lost to Fred Savage. And Jean Marsh, the queen, she won for Best Supporting Actress. She was nominated for Best Supporting Actress, but she lost to Sylvia Sidney for Beetlejuice. I don't know who Sylvia Sidney was in Beetlejuice, but there you go. Those are some of the awards.
Sylvia Sidney?
Do we need to? I'll pull it up on
Google IMDb. It, please.
Sylvia Sidney.
Because I know everybody. Gina Davis, Catherine What's-Her-Face, Winona Hey Girl.
Juno is her character name.
In Beetlejuice?
In Beetlejuice. But when you go to IMDb and you type in Sylvia Sidney, then like it literally just says actress Beetlejuice 1988 in the search results under her name.
She got an award for it.
Apparently. But it looks like she's been in like pictures for a really long time. So it was probably like, we meant to give this to you sooner, but we just didn't want to. Because here's the thing about awards. Applauders, I'm going to go on a rant. Excuse me as I step on a soapbox.
Like a toaster. Go on.
Okay. So the Academy Awards and most awards are only based on if you can go ahead and promote yourself to the people who are ultimately making the decisions, which are the judges of the awards. Who are these judges of the awards? I don't know, but they aren't me. And you know what's really fucked up about it? Do you know what's really fucked up about it?
Tell me. Do it. I see the froth. Go for it.
I'm getting on another soapbox on top of my first soapbox.
Soapbox. Be careful.
Okay. So the majority of the time, despite the high amount of people who love Marvel movies, and if you don't like Marvel movies because you think that they're cookie cutter, you know, movies that are just sort of spit out into the ether as like in a like overly produced sort of way and like a manufactured kind of way, then that's totally valid. But despite the high amount of like movies that actually get out there, they're pretty much the Academy Awards are just about as manufactured as Marvel movies. That's my point. So like
it's
you have to.
True. You buy yourself into awards a lot of the time.
Right. And you go ahead and nominate yourself and you put yourself out there. And like whenever you see like some of these high end movies that like, oh, this was Academy acclaimed and this was Academy nominated, it's because of the fact that a lot of actors and directors and writers, they want to go ahead and have that little like moniker on their name as like a grant, like, you know, Academy nominated or like some like that. So they can go ahead and ask for more money.
I love the Tracy Morgan EGOT arc from 30 Rock. Like I have these awards, so I'm a valid actor. And it turned out to not mean anything because, you know, what makes you happy is the thing that makes you a valid actor.
Yeah? Or like, well, like I haven't seen 30 Rock, but it's more like I don't know of how many times, like, I want you to think of an actor that probably hasn't gotten accolades as much as they probably deserve. Because I know, like, I'm not huge in the industry, but there are plenty of things. Like, I think about, like, movies that get you know, shown. Like, when was the last time you heard about Kingdom on Netflix? Nobody ever talks about it, like
four episodes ago, and it's still in my queue to watch.
But here's the thing. It's a show that fills me with so much joy, and I don't think it's getting nearly as many accolades as it probably deserves because it's a fun show. But here's the thing. Like, it's art. It's all subjective. And so when I think about, like, Academy Awards, I kind of roll my eyes because I'm like, okay, so like I think it's great that Willow got these nominations because like the people who were nominated, they could go ahead and take those nominations and be like, see, I deserve more money, and Warwick Davis deserves all the money if you ask me.
I will not find you in the wrong about that.
Excuse me while I get off both my soapboxes.
Oh, well, you gotta step down twice. Be careful, don't trip. Beautiful. Hey Jen, you got some more Sean facts?
Yeah,
hold on a second, I gotta put my chin on the mic.
You're really going to make me edit this one, aren't you?
I won't. I'll forget in like 5 minutes, but I just care. Hey, Jen, you got some Sean facts for us in addition?
Yeah, I got a few more that I can introduce us with, and then I'll kind of pepper them out throughout the rest of the, I guess, month ahead. Box office gross was $137 million, and it had a budget of $35 million.
Oh, hey! Oh, yeah, Ron Howard. Oh, you get that money. You throw that Skrilla on it.
I have no idea what any of those words mean. I understood Ron and I understood Howard.
He made the money, Liz. That's all that matters.
It was less than expected, so none of the additional productions that George Lucas had were made. He wrote them into a trilogy of books instead.
Of course he did. Of course he did.
Oh, no.
He can't do anything less than three times. Here's the thing. If you went for a meal at his house, he'd be like, you enjoy that grilled cheese sandwich? You enjoy it? Here's some tomato soup. You like the tomato soup? Here's a sundae. He showed up at his house. He'd be like, hey, I brought in your mail. He's like, you'd like to bring that mail? I left my Amazon package on the front step.
The tomato soup feels almost a little bit better than the cheese sandwich and the sundae.
Well, the sundae was a little disappointing.
Then he'd be like, but you gotta hear about what we had yesterday. And then I'm going to tell you about what we're going to have tomorrow.
That'll be $1,300.
Three books.
Oh, no, no, no.
Collectively known as the Chronicles of the Shadow War.
I'd want to buy it now.
He shares a writer's credit with Chris Claremont, and they are individually titled The Shadow Moon in 95, Shadow Dawn in 96, and Shadow Star in the year 2000.
2000. All right, go on.
Yeah. So these are recent ones, which...
We were dating before the last one ended. Here's the thing. I was 5 when the movie came out. We were doing things that I don't want to admit to on our podcast by the time the last book came out.
That's true. And now... And into
hold on, Lydia's dying.
Into our 23rd year together in the year 2022, Ron Howard is directing the Willow TV series for some streaming network.
It's because it's a property that they know that people are going to actually invest like actual time in, because you can't have original properties anymore unless it's had a successful book series attached to it.
I worked for Star Wars and Lucas knows all about that. And I have never read a Star Wars side piece.
But here's the thing. A New Hope was an original creation.
It's true. Lucas went to several major film studios, and a lot of them, even after Star Wars, said no to this project. Because they believed that the fantasy genre was unsuccessful at large. So they were looking at movies like Kroll, Legend, Dragon Slayer, and Labyrinth even. And those...
Jim Henson's Labyrinth?
Jim Henson's Labyrinth.
We haven't covered that. But if you want to get mistaken with the episode we did do that was Pan's Labyrinth, feel free to mess with your own head, because we'll be only doing it partially through the rest of this episode.
You remind me of the Rebel.
What rebel?
Rebel with the power.
What power?
The power of voodoo. Sorry, I'm not really good at like mimicking.
No, it's Pedro points. With the power of Pedro points. Voodoo, you do. Remind me of that, babe.
Yeah. We keep interrupting you, Jen. I'm sorry.
We'll get to the plot. It's fine.
Just tomorrow.
Just one more Sean Fact, please.
Hey, remember that sound bite I wanted to put in for Sean Facts? Pew, pew, pew. Sean Fact. Go ahead.
Oh, but there is also, as far as sound effects go, the... What is the scream?
Oh, the Wilhelm scream.
The Wilhelm scream. The Wilhelm scream is featured 3 times by different soldiers in this movie.
I said it to you.
Yes.
I said it to your face at least once.
We were wrong about it in Princess Bride, but not this time.
Okay, one second. Oh, it's a Wilhelm scream compilation.
Yeah, it's going to be... Look, eventually it's going to be our text tone.
Sorry. Okay. So, everybody ready?
Huh. I've made that noise. It's fine.
Okay.
All right. And if you think that this film actually has some good writing, you would be in disagreement with the Raspberry Awards, who included this as the worst screenplay of the year, but they lost to Cocktail. And worst supporting actor, Billy Barty, who lost to Dan Aykroyd for Caddyshack 2. So still nominated, by the Razzberries.
The Razzies were bad in 88. Hold on, let me get on a soapbox. The Razzies were bad in 88. They're wrong.
I won't disagree. They're bad all the time, aren't they? Isn't that the point?
Yeah, I get that. Okay, Jen. You beautiful creature. Yes, you're so smart. No, you're very smart and I love you. You're very pretty. But like also, when I say bad, I don't mean like Huey Lewis in the news, sometimes bad is good. I mean, sometimes bad is bad, which is also Huey Lewis in the news. So you're wrong, but you're not wrong, but you're like wrong.
They're the ones that are basically like, yeah, but it doesn't hold a candle to Toxic Avenger.
Don't make me talk about trauma films on this podcast.
Okay, we don't have to. That's basically the initial data that you need to know from Sean in order to lay out a good foundation for what is quite possibly going to be a 2-month-long, 1-month-long review.
Okay. But here's what also you need to know, applauders, that it's a lot of action and we don't know how to talk about that very good. So we like skip, like we'll talk and be like, there's a battle scene and like boop, 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 boop happened. And like, then we get right back to this dialogue. We misinterpret.
That didn't really work for the 13th Warrior though.
Did it? I feel like it did because the horses are falling and I'm being super like, whatever. But okay. So what happened? Hey.
Are we getting into the movie?
Did we all board? Do you have your tickets? Are we on a train?
Is it an exposition train?
Is it like, woo, exhibition station, ladies and gentlemen, and there are variations thereupon.
And it goes ahead and lets you know exactly what's happening through writing on the wall.
What do they call that? It's just a text card.
Text scroll. Yeah, it's not a text scroll. It's just a text card. So this is what it says.
Yes.
It is a time of dread. Seers have foretold the birth of a child whom will bring about the downfall. Sorry, the downfall.
Not downfall.
No, it's the downfall.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Dan. Ah! He does that scream. Ah!
Dan Wilhelm.
Oh, poor Dan Wilhelm. And it's falling all the time. Poor
Seers have foretold the birth of a child who will bring about the downfall of the powerful queen, Bavmorda.
Whose name I will now up for the rest of the podcast.
That's okay. We got just one more card.
Okay, go ahead.
Seizing all pregnant women in the realm. The evil queen vows to destroy the child when it's born.
This is like pretty typical for fantasy movies. They got to give you some backstory. Like Lord of the Rings did it with like Galadriel, you know, talking over like a dark screen and then it like fades into misty mountains.
I just thought, hey, this seems pretty freaking biblical. I mean,
fantasies generally have like a twinge of prophecy.
Yeah, it was just very familiar prophecy. Like, sorry, it ain't the dudes this time. It's the lady bits. Hey, check the lady bits. Check for a birthmark. And for those of us who were born with a birthmark.
Did you ever think that someone was going to like come and get you?
No, no one's going to look at my thigh mole and be like, ma'am, she needs some good old fashioned killing.
So this does kind of like remind me a little bit of a book by Ursula K. Le Guin called The Tombs of Atuan. It's pretty much, it's part of the Earthsea trilogy, which ended up turning into like 6 books instead of 3. But it pretty much takes place at the very beginning. You find out that there's like this religious order who goes through all of these different towns to see if there's any children who have not been like afflicted with I think it's like a smallpox disease. And then that child is taken and it's like seen as the reincarnation of their last priestess who was like in charge of everything. So it's like, I mean, it's like that was the first thing that I thought of, but I've been getting into Ursula K. Le Guin lately and it's great.
I unfortunately, or maybe differentially, looked at this scene and was like, no magic? Okay, baby smuggling. Let's do it.
Yeah, baby gets, like, mom knows that this baby is doomed for death, and so she pleads with the wet nurse.
Midwife.
To go ahead and take her baby. And it's like, please spare my child.
They're going to kill her.
Spare my child. And the lady's like, yeah, okay.
Stuffs them in a laundry basket. Okay, here's the thing. Our title billing is going on right now. Guess who gets second billing?
It's Warwick Davis.
Yeah, Val Kilmer gets first billing.
Are you sure it's second billing? I thought it was third. It was like Val Kilmer, Joanne Woolley, and then it was Warwick Davis.
You know what? That's how it was in the credits. So I bet you're 100% right.
Yeah.
But what made me super mad is it's called Willow.
Why doesn't Warwick Davis have top billing? I agree with you.
Thank you. We should write a letter to the Razzies.
Dear George Lucas. Oh, excuse me. Dear Ron Howard, if you had any actual control on this movie.
CC.
George Lucas.
They didn't, actually. George Lucas was incredibly angry at this.
Good.
What?
And expressed that to the studio, and Ron wasn't allowed to change it.
Okay, in the TV show that's going to be coming up, Warwick Davis gets top billing. End of discussion.
He should be the old... but he should be the old Pete priest,
yeah,
shouldn't he?
Yeah.
The magician, the sorcerer of the town.
He has to, like, go on one final, like, trek through the world.
I kind of want that, but if he's just the old guy in town who's b***ing at everyone, I would be super down. He's just like, you don't know what's going on right now. I'd be like...
Thank you, Warwick. Thank you very much, Warwick. Mr. Davis, I mean, thank you very much.
So who should we be writing this angry letter to, Jen? Did the Sean facts mention any specific people that we should be yelling at as, like, white women who should be talking to managers right now?
I will Karen for you, Warwick, 100%.
Probably
It's like
not.
some studio that's been purchased from somebody else at this point.
A studio that was improperly managed, and that's why they're not around anymore. And those people should get strung up by their toes or their testicles.
Toasticles.
Pop, pop, popsicle. Ice, ice, icicle. Test, test. Testing, 1, 2, 3.
What is that from?
So, you remember Sharita from drama?
Yeah.
She said that in the church that she went to, she said that the people, because, like, whenever you go and talk to people who used to actually go to churches and be involved with those things,
yeah,
you find some messed up in there.
Yeah.
Or just some stuff that's really funny that would not pass for Christian.
They'd be like, we had this song we used to sing, but then when we weren't singing that song, we would sing this version of the song.
Right.
And that was always amazing.
I believe it was Sharita. And Sharita, if you ever listen to this podcast and you feel like you want to call me out on it, feel free to call me out on it. But I believe it was you. And you said that, like, when they were doing sound checks for worship, you used to say that they would say pop, pop, popsicle, ice, ice, icicle, test, test, testing, 1, 2, 3, which I absolutely love. Which, as someone who works in a Christian organization, I will tell you, whenever fantasy football would come around, it got tense. Like the vice president of the company that I used to work for, like, took one of his daughter's stuffed animals and put very long push pins into them and hung them outside of the technical director's door because they were on opposite sides of the fantasy football teams. It was a little bit like, are you trying to cast voodoo, or is this just to psych him out? It doesn't matter. We're Christian, and I don't think you should be doing that, guy.
I work in a closed facility. So I have to ID people when they come in the building, and that's fine, having you sign in and everything. But here's the thing. I've seen you every weekday for the past 2 years. So, like, yeah, Roman, I know you, and you know that I know you, but I've been talked to by management. So could you show me your ID so that I can show the corporate overlords that I ID'd you when you came in the room? And they're like, I haven't been ID'd in like 6 months. I'm like, I know. Just pull your wallet, government ID, your business ID. I don't really give no s***. Just show me your ID with your name on it. And they pull out an ID and they're like, really? I have not been ID'd in this long. And I'm like, I know. Oh, look. You're who you say you are. And I sign the piece of paper and I stick it over there and they look at me like I'm insane. But I bet, you know what? Corporate's never going to call me out again because I'm a pedantic piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Stupid. Oversight is like stupid. It's dumb. Nobody cares about what goes on in our building.
So I have a theory about large corporations.
Tell me. I'll confirm it or deny it.
They would not have to worry about security so much if they were actually, like, investing into the community that they lived in. or if they were actually paying like into, like if they were like, if they were actually paying in to things like schooling or social programs, and they were doing it like very upfront and very generously, the community that they, that was benefiting them, that they would probably be working in, would not f- with their shit.
I could see where why you might say that, but we are in a manufacturing block. So on every side of us, there are only manufacturing buildings. There is no residential communities for at least 2 miles on any side. So there's really no community. In fact, and let me speak out of turn, a lady at my facility had a dog that she took to a dog park. Cute little dog. Seen pictures. Cute, cute dog, right? Sweet dog. Loved by this little lovely lady. Mm-hmm. Like little lovely dog loved by this little lovely lady. So much that she bragged to me about this dog. Went to a dog park. A dog attacked her dog. Bleeding. Vet bills. Guy's like, no, no, I'll take care of it. I promise. Took the dog to the vet. Guy never answered any phone calls. Mm-hmm. Guy never responded to any, hey, my dog needed this, so I need this. Never responded.
Uh-huh.
Works 2 buildings away. Is not accountable for the... There's no community.
Mm-hmm.
I work in a black, gray, gray, black hole where... We're all garbage and we can just leave anytime we want to.
Right. And I guess that if you wanted to move a manufacturing facility into a community where there were schools and grocery stores and like residential areas, then you could very easily have like one community is like set against the other one.
Hmm.
So you could very easily see those lines. And then you'd have to be like, yeah, I gotta kind of go to like social war. From a company because of the fact that they invest so heavily into this. So you're still like, you're still having to like bow down to like some sort of power. I mean, it's not, it's only gonna come, I mean, unless you really have like small company, small communities where, but even still, like there's issues with small communities. So it's like,
you know what? Okay, look.
Logistically speaking, it's just all kind of a mess. And I don't think there's ever really gonna be a permanent solution. There's always gonna be issues.
Here's why this genre is super satisfactory for those of us who have been grouped into that previously stated. Who are you devoted to in a fantasy community? You are devoted to your family, you are devoted to a divination, or you are devoted to a government structure. There's like 3 options. Four if you vouch for Mad Mardigan. Mad, okay, 4 if you're like, no, none of that seems good, right? Like family, deity, government, myself. And we unfortunately don't operate under those 4 facilities in the culture we live in. Not really. And if we could, or if we did, it would probably be a more clear, more beautiful society.
But
here's where we are. Hey, look, they found a baby. The littles found a baby in the river.
So throughout the full, like, after our, so going back to our original complaint, did you find out who we should be writing this angry letter to, Jen?
Oh, well, right now it's Disney.
Oh, Disney.
But that's
pay our bills.
We would have to complain, like, retroactively and say, now go hunt down MGM. And then hunt down 20th Century Fox, who owns the VHS distribution rights, and it there always gets a little murky.
If anybody was on the production of Willow and you were the who was like, no, Warwick Davis isn't going to be the lead because he's not well known, I want you to go ahead and slap yourself in the face right now at least 10 times because you're a jerk. You're a jerk. You're a jerk.
Okay.
That so being said.
That what happens is the baby is smuggled away from her then murdered mother.
Correct.
And I will be the facilitator for us jumping through certain parts of this plot. How about that? You like that?
Yes.
I would like to point out how easy it is to just have some swaddling cloth and say, this is my baby, without there being a baby in
like
there.
1,000 times in this film. Oh, is that a bundle of cloth that kind of looks like a baby? It's a baby.
No, it's a pig.
This is the first time it happens, actually, because the... And I will call her the evil queen until the end of this podcast. But she comes in and she says, give me the baby. And she's like, you can never have my baby. And she's like, give me the baby. Oh, she grabs the wad of cloth and she's like, this isn't a baby. Where's the baby? And then this lady has managed to make it outside of the castle with the baby not crying, which I will vouch is not how that works. And then, like, she makes it into the woods where she then lives for what I estimate to be about 8 months. That baby has got to be the better part of 9 months, if not an entire year old. Like, not verbal, but like not like a talky person yet, you know?
Yeah, she's got some hair on her. She's got some curls growing by the time that this montage and of the opening credits is done.
So lion dogs are, well, I'm sure we'll talk about them, but like lion dogs are released after her and she like can't, like Jen. Okay, so the dogs are after her. I said, hey, Moses treatment. Jen says, hey, no, return to Oz treatment. And then like, okay, she like whacks at dirt on the side of the river until it's unlodged enough that she can put the baby on this thing and shove it out into the river, and then it rolls away and she like runs it back. I admit that I admire the fact that she crossed the river, unleashed the moss barge, let the baby go, and then went back to the dogs to like further obfuscate like the fact that she had been, you know, with the baby at all. And that, I think, eluded the trackers for like a little while longer. But she gets eaten by the dog lions.
Right. And like, this is a point to her. And I don't remember exactly where I heard it, but I remember in one of those like probably like nature documentaries where maybe they get like 10% of the information correct. But there's this idea that the reason why like that foxes will cross water to take their scent off of anything that might be hunting them. So like the dogs like finding her, attacking her, and maybe not smelling the baby because the baby's on water. Like the water kind of diffuses that scent a little bit.
100%. Plus also, let us admire the fact that these dogs, who we never correctly identify, maybe it's a Sean fact later on. Oh, I see Jen nodding. I can't wait. Okay, I'm like very excited, but let me also talk for a second so I seem like I am a creator in this podcast. Okay, so the actress, or maybe even a stunt double, sees the lion dogs, and I gotta say, they're like R-O-U-S-es, but like
a dog form.
Like a dog. Like it's fast and sleek like a dog, except they've put like a mop dog thing on top of it that's all gray and black.
So instead of rodents of unusual size, it's dogs of unusual size?
D-O-U-S-es. Okay, so if you notice, she's on the bank of the river, and the dog is like, I'm gonna bite the f*** out of you. And she's like, cool, cool, cool. And she holds up the arm. And if you've ever seen attack dog training, they have like a soft arm sleeve that they hold in front of themselves. And she holds it up in front of her. I'm so sorry. The dog attacks her arm and she goes down immediately. Yeah. And I'm like, that seems reasonable. That's right. That's how you do. That's how you get an attack. That's how you not die.
So this whole moment reminds me of Kung Fu Panda 2 at the very end, when Po realizes that his mom like put him into this crate of radishes and then like ran off as like this pursuing mob is coming at her. And she's like, oh, I'm over here. Like, come and find me because you don't want to get to my baby. But she doesn't say that last part because she's trying to save her baby. That's what this reminds me of, is like, I'm going to save my baby as a way of trying to like come in and like sacrifice myself so you don't get my baby, because I want my baby to live, and this is its best possible option in the moment.
Yeah, I will die so the child can live is like the saddest yet proudest parent narrative I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and she's just the midwife.
It's impossible not to fall in love with this baby.
Yeah,
because this is the first part of my notes that says, this portion of the movie will be played by a baby doll with a tuft of red hair glued to it.
But the other portion is like a baby with actual expressions.
Like a close-up. Like, it doesn't even have to be the baby. It doesn't have to be the person in the scene holding the baby. It's just the baby's face emoting in a glorious way.
Yeah. And like, this is the best way to, like, if you're going to have a baby as a main character, or in this case, like a baby as a MacGuffin, then this is probably the best way to add personality, is just like, this is like what the audience should feel in the moment. And this is the expression that the baby's giving, which goes on to my next point, which is a baby Moses finds the best family ever. And then my note after that is, confused baby is confused.
Yeah. So a little baby boy, who I say baby boy, but he's maybe even as old as like four, I would guess. He comes up to Warwick, who, oh,
yep, here's Warwick.
Yeah. Willow is tilling the fields. Then his little boy comes up and is like, Dad, come down to the river. We found a baby and I want you to come see it.
He's like, we found something at the river. You should come and get it. And
he's like, no, I've got to till the fields.
I can't come and find every little thing you want to do. It's like,
Daddy, you must come down and look at it.
He specifically calls him Dada. And I'm like, oh.
And then Warwick, sorry. Willow is like,
okay.
So dumb. And he's like, yeah, no, I'll ditch my work. I'll come down and look at what you want me to see because I've let my small children play by the river.
Look, he's on his own schedule. He works from home. He has kids that he's taking care of. He doesn't have to like answer to a manager directly in a lot of ways.
Okay.
So he goes and he sees it and he sees that this baby is floated up on the shore and his son and his daughter are all like, oh, what, it's a baby, Dada.
Don't touch it. We don't know where it's been.
It's sensible.
He's like, you know what? Okay, look, you know what? We're gonna push it down the river, pretend we never saw it. That's what we're gonna do. And then it's like, meh. He's like, oh, the last thing I need is the evil landlord. I mean, same, right? And he's like, okay, guys, look, you two toddlers, small children and or toddlers, it's hard to tell. He's like, you stay here, don't touch it. Keep it quiet, like either of them knows how to deal with a tiny, tiny child.
Yeah, just keep an eye on it. I'll be right back.
Yeah, and then he like goes back to the field where now we encounter...
We encounter Kaya, his wife, and the rich guy of the village that he obviously owes money to, Burglecut. I was like, Willow, you haven't even paid your debts. Where did you get this seed? Blah, 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 blah.
We came about them honestly. We got those seeds in the right way. And then he's like, blah, 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 like fat, angry overlord that I am. Yeah. And he's like, my family's been gathering these seeds in the forest since last season. And he's like, blah, 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 blah. And then Kaya, whomst I love so much, she hears the kids and she's like, you left our children by the river?
And then she goes over to her kids as the responsible adult.
Yeah. And
Willow has to like negotiate with Burglecut.
You see a moment where he's like, I guess I have to let her. And he and Burglecut they verbal repartee for like a hot second. And then as soon as Burglecut runs away, he like runs to the river and he's like, hey, under no circumstances are any of you to fall in love with that baby. And then
Kaya walks off with a baby and he's like,
she's like, oh, so sweet. Yeah, I love you so much, baby.
And do you know what he says in response? Hey, I will not be ignored, as he is ignored
by all four of them.
Right. And so they bring this baby back into their home and they're like being all loving and everything. And he mentions as his kids are looking at the baby at the river before the Burglecut scene that, oh, this must be a Daikini baby. And this is our first instance that maybe this baby is born to people of the stature of everybody here in this podcast.
Like a tall person as opposed to a little person.
Right, because Warwick Davis and his family are all little people. And so they, when you hear about like the different names that kind of get flown around in this world, like Daikini and Nelwyn, there's like you can visually see the difference between the two of them. And so you're like, oh, okay, these are what when he says Daikini the first time, you're like, okay, so either it's like an entire region's different, but they like skin tone, there really isn't any difference in skin tone. The only real difference is in like height. Am I making sense?
I think you are making sense. I feel like those are the only two real differences that we observe as third parties between Daikini and
Nelwyn. Yeah. Yeah. Feel free to correct me, any applauders who are listening.
Or so. Sean during Shock Talk. Let's do it.
The kids do ask, what is a Daikini? And Willow says they're giants to the north.
Yeah. Oh. So they are, we are talking about an isolated troop of people. Or maybe even a tribe of people. And so we do have what we have reiterated several times in the podcast about the us versus them, you know, other idea.
Right.
But I don't feel like we spend too much time on it, except for a couple verbal cues that we like. we have to deal with, but maybe not as harshly as we did with the last film. What we do learn from this scene is that Kaya, whomst, again, I freaking love.
Yeah.
Is like, yeah, no, I'm super down. I want to be a mommy, like all over this baby right now. And Willow is like, hey, I got to go in there doing the apprentice thing today. And despite the fact that he needs to get his fields turned before the rains return, he's like, but I really want to be a sorcerer. So I got to go apply for this apprenticeship. And do you find this adorable? He's like, I'm going to take my two little bobbins with me. He's like, I'm going to take the two littles with me. You take the little, and I will go. And she's like, cool. Tight.
Willow is essentially a full-time stay-at-home worker, but he also has aspirations, so he wants to go back to school.
Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, so what happens is we see this festival happening in town, and I'm sure we can talk about it at great length, but it is the greatest, least othering, most beautiful, glorious, and I don't want to be so I don't know how to say it right, but like of little person actors I've ever seen, one of the greatest scenes I have ever gotten to witness. And as a child, when I witnessed it, I was like, oh, yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. They all belong to the same group and they're all like doing things together. And that as a grown person rewatching this, I'm like, how shocking, I guess I would say, is it that these people are being treated as people
mm-hmm.
who have full and interesting lives,
mm-hmm.
see people playing music, kissing, laughing, dancing, smacking each other on the back, enjoying a totally 100% relatable festival feel.
There's dancing, music's playing. Mm-hmm. We see Willow performing a magic. We see him performing several magic tricks. One, in fact, with a pig. That is important. It's Chekhov's magic trick.
Yeah, he tries to make a... first of all, he stabs his arm through with a flame, which mm-hmm. I think is a super cool trick. And my dad did something similar with a needle and blood, and it was mm-hmm. amazing. And I loved that trick. But then he does something similar with a fire stick and a log on his mm-hmm. arm. And then, look, he's unharmed. But now he's going to make a pig disappear. And the pig runs out from under the stage. And he's like, ugh. And landlord guy's like, I don't need to see anymore. I'm a jerk anyway. Yeah. And he walks away. And everybody else walks away at the same time. But if you look at the people in the background, and I guess if maybe you have a thermometer or a barometer or a mermometer of your favorite choosing, and you look at these people, like, you can tell that a lot of them are genuinely having a good time. Like, they had just kind of set up these scenarios and were like, hey, look, you're dancing and this is how you dance. Now go.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you're jesting with each other and this is how you look, how, then go. You're observing this off screen, right? And then react how you would react and go. And they filmed it and it just feels so genuine and warm and inviting, even in a way that like Lord of the Rings didn't seem to be able to capture with the hobbits. And these guys are not, obviously, they're not hobbits,
mm-hmm.
but like it's immaculate.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. I can't say enough about it because when I was a child, I thought nothing of it. And now that I'm a more ignorant adult, I guess, it's glorious.
Internet says there's maybe 240 to 260 little person actors in this movie. And that's the largest that there's been. There's certainly a lot more than even Wizard of Oz, which is interesting in a related Sean fact that the original story for Willow was called The Munchkins. It was written in 1972, and that was the original title.
I don't like that.
Yeah.
You can leave that.
So,
I thank you for telling me that, but also, no thanks.
Right. Like, the acting in this scene, like, going back to, like, the Hobbit scene where everybody's kind of, like, having that same celebration and everything for Bilbo's birthday, like, you could tell that there was a lot of people in that town, but like in this scene you have a lot more moments where the camera is like focusing on random people and their expressions,
mm-hmm.
and you can tell that these actors are having a fun time.
Well, and I don't know this for sure, but when Willow is giving his magic act, there are kid persons and adult persons standing around him, and like he'll pull a trick and they'll be like, ooh.
And even Burglecut is like, oh, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, but his seems a little acty contrived. But mm-hmm. everyone's like, when he pulls the flame out of his arm log mm-hmm. and he's not burned, like a kid's like, oh. And I'm like, yeah, kid, that's amazing to see. When I first saw something very similar back in like there's a magician shop below Pike's Place Market in Seattle. That's totally worth going to. Local represent. But like, when I first saw it, I was like, that is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And so when he pulls a similar trick and a kid has the same reaction I did, it's very relatable. And so, like, you cannot manufacture those kinds of reactions.
Right.
I wish, look, you could take out, like, 25% of the middle of this film and just give me the townsfolk of these people, and I would be, like, super down.
Right.
It must be interesting from the perspective that this is a group that is a minority, and probably not a minority that has very many opportunities to gather.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think that a lot of the actors on there, even the ones that weren't given, you know, specific speaking roles and that kind of thing, were engaged in a way because they got to be in a thing where they were all being represented.
I want to second you on that, because documentaries and TV shows that I've watched have talked about how they have conventions, and obviously not in the last couple of years, but previous to that, there have been conventions where people who have dwarfism get together and they hang out. And a lot of them, if that's what they're interested in, find spouses there. I mean, it's a hookup spot, because you are deprived of people who you identify with in a lot of ways, because it's such a rare genetic disorder. And I don't mean to speak out of turn, and I don't mean to, but like, especially in like 88, like, or 87, I suppose, when it was filmed, like that had to have been huge. And I mean, like, even in a relatively smaller place than the United States where we are, like in the UK, like there must not have been as great a concentration, you know?
I don't think this was filmed in Britain. They did have a lot of British actors that they used. But I think that, if I remember correctly from research, they wanted to film a lot in China, and China wouldn't allow them to do very much, if at all. But they did get opportunities in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of those first opportunities where Fantasy and New Zealand got the hookup.
Oh, Fantasy and New Zealand got the hookup is the name of my fanfic.
So this celebration in this specific Nowen village is not just for celebration's sake. It's because of the fact that the High Walden, High Altwin? Oh, wow, I don't know that. The guy who's in charge of all of the magic, he goes ahead and is choosing an apprentice this year. And so he goes ahead and grabs like three different people who want to go, or they come up to the stage, and these are people who want to go ahead and...
He wants to apprentice to be a sorcerer.
Yes.
It is called the High Altwin.
Altwin, yeah.
Okay, so High Altwin does a Stan Lee impression that I cannot deny. He's like, hey, true believers, my name is the High Altwin, and I'm going to tell you about, Naomi can't do an actual Stan Lee impression. Yeah, true believers.
I thought that was accurate.
Is there a Tony Stank here?
Okay, so he's all like, who's all my potential apprentices? And there's three guys who go up. He holds up five hands. He's only got five hands. He holds up five fingers. He says, pick the finger that will change the world, or something fancy like that, right?
Pick the finger that has the most power.
Right. So dude picks a finger, he puts it down. He picks the middle finger.
Yeah. It was like, yeah, that would be a pretty powerful finger.
And so then the other guy picks like his
pointy, it's his pointy finger.
His pointer finger.
Yeah.
And then it gets to Warwick and he's like, and he picks the
ring finger.
The ring finger. And so now guy's got like this hang loose size, and he's like, nope, no apprentice this year. Another year with no apprentice. And he stomps off, and everybody's like, ooh.
Part one of our review of Ron Howard's 1988 fantasy film Willow has concluded, applauder. But we have an extra long episode planned for you this month, spanning an epic four parts. We've still got so much ground to cover in our plot walkthrough, along with our shocked and applaudable moments at the end of the month. Looking for some great non-film podcasts to fill your time before part two? Never a Straight Answer podcast is a society, culture, and conspiracy podcast that recently brought on author Liz Reeder to discuss the Wendigo. And Hush Hush Society Conspiracy Hour recently released their 24th episode discussing the moon landings. You can find links to these conspiracy shows in this release's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and Burglecut's bankrupt barber, because he's bald, Jen. Did you notice how many times we had to bleep offensive words this week? Wouldn't it be great if there was a way to hear the episode as we originally intended, while still providing non-explicit content to the masses? Good news! For only $1 per month, you can be a subscriber to Shocked and Applaud's non-bleeped catalog of episodes. Search for Shocked and Applaud on Patreon, or click the heart icon at the top of shockedandapplaud.com to learn more. We'll be back in 1 week for part two of this endearing fantasy film. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.